The chief medical officer is increasingly worried about the rising incidence of COVID-19 nationwide, and we now have the highest COVID levels in hospitals since last March. The Irish Times reporting this morning that Minister Stephen Donnelly gave what was described as a stark presentation to the Cabinet Subcommittee on COVID-19. Numbers in ICU up 22% in the past week, numbers in hospital up 41% in the last fortnight. There were 2,193 new cases of COVID-19 confirmed yesterday. Liam Woods is the HSE National Director of Acute Hospitals, and good morning to you, Liam Woods. The numbers here, 513 COVID cases in hospital right now, 97 in ICU. How much pressure is on the hospital system now, and how much pressure is on hospital staff?
Good morning, Mary. I think the answer is there is a lot of pressure and growing pressure on the hospital system and on hospital staff right now. As you've referred to, COVID has increased significantly in recent weeks, and the numbers of cases in the community would suggest that within hospitals it will go further, because as we're aware at this stage in the pandemic, there is a lag effect between the community incidents and what's going on in our hospitals. I think Dr. O'Connor from James's yesterday was flagging to you that now half of their ICU is occupied with COVID patients. So it's an increasing pressure that we now need to respond to, and are taking measures to try and work as best we can, both in the delivery of normal services. And I think it's important to recognise that right now hospitals are running beyond the 2019 levels in terms of emergency department attendances. And so much has returned to normal within the system, but we're also now dealing with a growing level of COVID, which, as you've said in your intro, is now at the highest level since January, February of this year, which was the peak.
Now, there are lots of issues there. Let's talk about this lag effect. We've heard modelling from Philip Nolan suggesting within the next 2 to possibly 3 weeks, you could have anything up to 200 people in your ICUs. You could have between 1,000 and 2,000 in hospital. Are they the figures that you're working towards, and how do you make provision for that?
Yes, the modelling, we take information from the modelling all the time. We would hope it wouldn't go that high, but having said that, we're alert to the notion that there are nearly 100 people at the moment in ICU, and would have peaked previously at just over 200.
And just to remind ourselves, sorry, just on that, how many vacant ICU beds do you have as of this morning?
So in total, there are 301 ICU beds, and we have 100 occupied, just under 100 occupied with COVID. In terms of vacant beds, the answer is normally very few, between 15 and 20, normally reflecting movement of patients. That ICU bed capacity has grown by 50 in the last 12 months, which is very helpful, and there is a commitment to grow that further, up toward 440, and that's a key investment really in our health services. In terms of managing the response to the pressure that's on ICU, to the question you asked me there, Mary, our intensivists are working in effect daily to get best use of the ICU beds. Our mobile intensive care ambulance service is moving patients between locations, which is a normal part of health service delivery, but at this time becomes more used to deal with stress in individual locations. So a hospital like Limerick this morning has 49 patients with COVID on site. That's a very significant requirement in care terms for staff to provide. Galway and the Mater would also be very high at 34 and 31. So these are major impacts in terms of normal care provision and, of course, serious service requirements for those individual patients.
Now, as you call it, normal care provision, what normal care provision will just have to wait, will have to be cancelled and deferred, these elective and planned procedures that people have been waiting months, if not years, for?
So I think the impact of spikes in COVID on waiting times for service, unfortunately, is negative. And our experience has been that we've seen an accumulation of waiting primarily for elective, for planned procedures, mostly surgical procedures. We have bought service and continue to in the private sector to offset some of that loss in the public system. But in reality, when we experience increases in COVID at the level we are at the moment, it has a real impact in our capacity to provide other services.
So what are we experiencing right now, and taking into account the numbers, the anticipated numbers you were talking about, what are you providing for in terms of of cancelling and deferring some of these elective procedures?
Yeah, so that actually would happen site by site, depending on demand for COVID care. At the moment, what we're allowing for is we have an arrangement in place with the private sector. We refer to a safety net. That's been there since March last year. So we are sending work to the private sector where that can be done.
Let me put it this way to you. Everybody who had received notification of a planned procedure for this morning, will all of those planned procedures go ahead?
If there was a cancellation, the hospital would make contact with the individual. Just to give you an example, when we looked last week at what was happening with planned procedures, we could see cancellations in relatively low numbers, but still maybe 10 per site. And that's significant, clearly, for the individuals. And it's a further requirement on the hospital to provide care at a future point. And those appointments will be rescheduled as soon as possible, clearly subject to the COVID impact on the site.
And what about this arrangement, as you say, that you have with the private hospitals? Have you any facility now to improve on or change that arrangement?
So we have, since March last year, had the capacity to use private hospitals, and it has worked very well. It's been very successful at providing care, cancer care and other critical care for patients. In terms of change and improvement, I think the requirement for us in the near term is to continue to use it in the way that we have. And it's about getting as many patients as we can to that environment for operations. And that's what we're at.
But if you need to bring the private sector in more because of these rising COVID numbers, can you do it? Are you in talks to do it?
We have that capacity already in the agreement we entered into last March. We also, just to reference, as a result of the cyber attack in May, made further specific arrangements with the private sector to support care delivery. And so we have been able to use the private capacity effectively. It's important to remember private hospitals are also affected by COVID. So they face challenges not dissimilar to the public hospitals. But we have been successful at using them to support public care needs, which we will continue to do.
Now, we heard last week that you had, I think, 1,800 healthcare workers out with COVID-19. Do you have the latest figures?
That's the latest number I have at the moment.
And That is still a huge figure for you to contend with. And is that doesn't include the numbers that would be out with other health issues?
No, indeed. I think at its peak, if you go back to January, February, the peak would have been maybe 5,700 staff out with COVID-related illness. So 1,800 is a concerning figure. I think in overall staff terms, just to reflect, the staff in the health system has grown in total numbers by 10,800 since the start of the pandemic. And that's important. That's very significant investment in doctors and nurses and other care providers. We've increased doctors by almost 1,200 and nurses by 2,800. So, but having said that, that investment has been significantly needed to address the COVID challenge we're facing.
Would you and your colleagues in the HSE and those healthcare workers like to see a decision now on a booster vaccine for the healthcare staff?
I think NIAC make those recommendations, so obviously we will adhere to the recommendations coming from NIAC, and at the moment we're engaged in vaccination of both immunocompromised individuals and people in nursing homes over 65. Should there be a recommendation for a booster for staff, then clearly we would move to implement that as part of our immunisation programme.
But as one of the experts says this morning in the papers, you know, we don't have a transmission blocking vaccine at the moment, and the evidence appears to be that the present vaccine, the bonus of not transmitting whatever was there, declines over time. So how crucial is it to keep the health service going, that this booster be given to
healthcare workers? Yeah, I think the clinical evidence, as you've reflected there, Mary, is the key point. At the moment, we're still seeing very low levels of infection among staff, but small rises. And yes, we'd be very supportive of a booster shot for staff, should that be the decision of NIAC.
Does it need to happen soon?
Evidence-based, and really for NIAC and clinical evidence to determine.
The HSE also has a programme underway to try to encourage what we'll call, I suppose, vaccine avoiders to take the jab. How is that going for you?
So we are still running the vaccine centres and walk-in vaccination centres, and there is an increase in numbers attending those. So that is demonstrating some success. We're also running pop-up clinics in hospitals and maternity hospitals as a facility for the public. And as the Chief Medical Officer said yesterday, vaccination is still our best defence. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that that continues and that it's successful.
360,000, I think, unvaccinated or a first vaccine when they didn't receive the second. By what level would you anticipate reducing that?
Well, I think we simply need to keep providing service. The target would be to reduce that very significantly, but we need people to continue to attend and be vaccinated as the best line of defence that we have. Very alert to the fact that we still have significant admissions to hospital of people who are not vaccinated.
Mm. We heard from the HSE, or I should say from HICWA yesterday, about information systems in the healthcare service. We heard about GPs still having to write letters to some sectors of the HSE, and people delivering service to older people in the community still using paper systems. Given the cyber attack, have you been able to avail of an opportunity to build back better?
Yes, I think there have been opportunities and learnings from the cyber attack that have facilitated that, and indeed COVID. So the vaccination system itself is a single national solution that works very well. There are other such solutions in place in areas like radiology, referred to as NIMIS, but the HICWA report, which makes a range of recommendations around workforce and legislative and indeed standards for information provision, I think is to be welcomed. I heard, I think it was Rachel Flynn on your show yesterday, and yes, we'd be very supportive of the conclusions of the report. And the HSE has had the opportunity both to invest and learn from the cyber attack.
Liam Woods, there we must leave it for now. Thank you very much for joining us. Liam Woods, HSE National Director of Acute Hospitals at